all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone with VeteransRadio.net. We are recording today from the Legal Help for Veterans studio in Northville, Michigan. Legal Help for Veterans is a veterans disability law firm. You can reach us at 800-693-4800.
We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today Sean Parnell, an Airborne Army captain who served in Afghanistan. Sean, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Hey, it's great to be back, like a year later, right?
It is. It's about a year later. So
we're making this a thing.
Well, you keep churning out the good work, and we can. Let's remind our listeners about your time in ROTC and how you got yourself into the Army and a little bit of background on your service in Afghanistan in the 2006-07 period.
Yep, that sounds good. I was a sophomore in college when the towers collapsed. We were attacked. And, you know, I feel like at that time, I really didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. I had no idea what my major was going to be. Only responsibility that I had in the world was writing papers, trying to get to class on time. And, you know, it's like when those towers came down, I just felt a call to serve my country. I wanted to get in the fight. I wanted to be in the front lines of that fight. You know, so I volunteered to join the Army and then the infantry and then airborne school and then Ranger school. And I went and did all those cool schools. And I ended up getting assigned to a unit called the 10th Mountain Division at Fort Drum, New York. And I was given a platoon in 2005. And at the time we were tasked to go to Afghanistan to fight in the war on terror. And if you remember, think back to 2005, the eyes of this nation were wholeheartedly fixated on the Iraq war and the surge, like, should it happen or should it not? And really at the time we had no idea what we were getting ourselves into. Afghanistan was just a stability and support operation. And so my unit gets to Afghanistan in 2006. My platoon's name was the Outlaws. We were the Outlaw Platoon. And we get to Afghanistan in 2006, and we were just thrown into a meat grinder. 485 days of combat. We took an 85% casualty rate. Six of my guys were shot in the head. It was just hellish close combat for 16 months.
And this is a period of time, as you say, nobody's really focused on Afghanistan. They're all focusing over on Iraq. And we should clear up, too, that the six guys who got shot in the head here, they survived, didn't they?
Yes, they survived. And, you know, it brought me on board and I became a big believer in the helmets that were issued, the Army, the combat helmets that were issued. And so, 85% of casualty, they were all wounds. I had some guys getting 2 and 3 Purple Hearts, but in the end, lost one soldier. And anytime you lose a soldier, it's tragic, you know, but all things considered, you know, on the kind of deployment that we had, my gosh, it's a miracle that we didn't take more casualties.
And you guys were up in, I guess I'll call it northern Afghanistan, up by Pakistan, in the area of the Hindu Kush Mountains, as I understand it.
Yeah, we were right on the border with Pakistan. My base was 5 kilometers from the border. And back then, our mission was just close with, destroy the enemy. Find the bad guys in that no man's land between Afghanistan and Pakistan. Root them out other mountain caves. Hunt them down and kill them. That was our mission. And so, like I said, we didn't really know what we were getting into. The enemy, the first time they attacked us, it was a really, really steep learning curve. But, you know, we got in the fight, and we took the fight to the enemy for 485 days. And, you know, by God's grace, I was able to come home intact.
And let's clear up who the enemy was at that point, because here we sit coming up in September of 2019, and they're talking about Afghan peace, programs and, you know, getting out and making friends with folks. But back then, who was the enemy?
Well, that's like a real complicated question. Even back then, I mean, we were fighting the Taliban, right? We were fighting Al Qaeda. We were fighting Hekmatyar terrorist faction in eastern Afghanistan. We were fighting the Akhani network, and then we were trying to, you know, we would also encounter criminals, crimes, you know, robberies, and we had to try to distinguish between who we were facing on any given day and whether or not it was an actual attack or a crime. It was dizzying. But there are a lot of bad guys in eastern Afghanistan, and I feel like we faced, you know, a global jihadist all-star team with people from all over the world.
And Sean, not only did your platoon take injuries during this 485 days, but you did as well.
Yeah. I was wounded on June 10th, 2006. I ended up fracturing my skull in a couple of different places. Had a cerebral spinal fluid leak, all from, you know, a mortar or an RPG. I don't really know what it is to this day what caused the injury, but I think it was. It was either a mortar or RPG. I was wounded in the first few seconds of our engagement on June 10th, 2006. And we were getting hit with mortars and we were getting hit with rocket propelled grenades. So one of those two are what caused my injuries.
Veteran radio listeners, we're talking to author Sean Parnell, and we're going to get to his most recent book, but I'm setting this up so that you understand he's the real deal. And he doesn't know exactly how he got injured there, not because he's a little dense, Sean, but you were.
I might be a little dense. Not sure about that, but.
You were knocked out. You were unconscious.
I was. I was knocked out for several seconds. Actually, I was knocked out two or three times. So I was wounded a couple times during that engagement by RPG mortar fire. Like I said, I didn't know this at the time, but I had a cerebral spinal fluid leak. I had fluid leaking out of my nose and ears. It was just a really tough time to be alive, I stayed with my men, and they stayed with me, right? They were, anytime they got wounded, all six of those men that were shot in the head, they wrapped bandages around their wounds and they stuck with the platoon. So, you know, we were sort of stood alone together out in the Hindu Kush Mountains in Afghanistan for a year and a half of combat. And yeah, we all suffered injuries. None of us came out unscathed, but for the most part, we made it home.
Well, and you got home and tried a few different things. When we talked last time, you said, look, I really had to settle on finding a mission that was bigger than myself. And this is after your medical discharge. You began writing, and we joked last time. I said, what did a kid from Pittsburgh think he could write a novel?
Truth.
Why did you think you could do this?
It's the truth. I still can't believe I'm doing it.
And now we're on book three. So there was Outlaw Platoon, which was the first book that was written. And then you wrote Man of War, a novel. And now coming out this month is All Out War, a continuation of that Eric Steele military thriller. Talk to us about sort of book two and where you wanted All Out War to go and where does it go next?
Yeah, that's, let me first start, I guess, by talking a little bit about the character Eric Steele. We talked a lot last time in our last interview about the importance of veterans, men and women coming home and continuing to serve something greater than themselves when they get back. And I wrote Outlaw Platoon to capture the legacy of my soldiers, to make sure that it was passed down from generation to generation, to ensure that the heroics on the battlefield were always remembered. And very quickly, I learned that even though Outlaw Platoon, it was a New York Times bestselling book, there's still a tremendous gap in this country between the men and women who protect freedom on a day-to-day basis and civilians who enjoy it, right? And so I just thought, you know, how can I help bridge that gap? And, you know, I started brainstorming a fiction series, and I thought, well, you know what? You know, maybe I should create a mainstream fiction hero that embodies the greatness of the men and women who serve our country. And, you know, Eric Steele is that character, and he truly is the personification of the values of the men and women who serve our country: honor, integrity, selfless, dedication to country. You know, he has all of those qualities that I think make up the best of the American military. And so, you know, I wanted to make sure that we gave our young people and next generation something, you know, fictional characters to aspire to be like. And so Eric Steele is the main character. He was in Man of War, and he's in my second book, All Out War. And I think in the second book, you know, his service gets very personal. And, you know, what's interesting about what I always try to do with these books is put Eric Steele in situations that are not unlike what the American military faces on the battlefield. The individual soldier in combat constantly questions himself, you know, hey, is the sacrifice worth it? Is the mission worth it? You know, what's the fallout at home? How is this affecting my wife? How is this affecting my mom and my dad, right? Anyone that served asked those questions. Eric Steele asks those questions as well. Now, of course, all of those situations are ratcheted up to 10, right? Turn the volume up to 10 on all of them, make sure it's action-packed. But Eric Steele in the second book is asking himself at the very beginning, is my service worth it? Is the mission worth it? Is the cost too high? And then he gets attacked at home and his mom gets hurt. She gets physically hurt. So the mission even takes the toll on his mother. And so again, mothers and fathers and wives or spouses in general, like they serve too. And while they might not be getting physically hurt in, you know, from that service, they still bear the emotional scars. So Eric Steele's journey, again, is not unlike those who don the uniform every single day. And so Eric Steele goes out on a mission for revenge after his mom is hurt, and he gets drawn into a conspiracy, the likes of which we've never seen in the thriller community, to where he faces an enemy that has put a target on the backs of our world leaders, and Eric Steele is called upon to save the world again.
Well, one of the things I think you do, and you've touched on it here, which is you want the fiction novel to ring true with feelings and concerns and doubts that military men and women might have. And you do that here. I noticed it when talking, you know, about the core guys who follow Eric, and they are his brothers to the end, literally at times. And he's asking himself, hey, I'm willing to make this sacrifice, but my band of brothers, if you will, I can't ask them to make that sacrifice. And I think that's one of those things that really rings true out of your experience, I suspect, as well.
That's exactly right. I mean, the whole, you know, this book is filled with those sort of themes that soldiers ask themselves every day. And again, all of this, you know, all of the inspiration behind this stuff is to help civilians understand what it means to serve this country, you know, and maybe that's why this book, I dedicated this book to anyone who's donned a uniform in defense of the country. And that's police, first responders, our military. This book is for them, because really what it does is I feel like it helps civilians understand what it means to serve, you know, the questions that go through our minds, the stressors, you know, military men and women, man, they go through a lifetime of stress in their 20s, and they're most people that I meet, you know, I've lost so many people that I love and I care about in the military that I feel like in many days I have more in common with senior citizens who are at that phase in their life than with people my own age. You know, ordinary civilians that are in their 30s, my buddies that have never served, don't have that experience. So if I can somehow help, you know, facilitate a level of understanding that's greater with the members of our military than it was before they read this book, then I feel like I'm accomplishing my mission.
Well, I want to also ask you about something that I noticed here that I think is a choice an author makes, and a choice that in this instance a veteran author makes. Now, we're talking to Sean Parnell, who's book All Out War is on the William Morrow imprint. It's HarperCollins Publishing. But you made a choice to put in a couple of female characters who are just, you know, killer on the battlefield, really turn up the heat elsewhere. Was that a conscious decision on your part to say, hey, women can be protectors as well?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, Meg is one of the heroes in this book too. She's a female protagonist. She's sort of Eric's partner in crime, but there's no question about it. Women can kick butt too, for sure. And, you know, I also wanted to give women a reason to pick up and read this book. When my daughter, she's amazing, right? When my daughter watches a movie with a female hero that kicks butt, it's one of the most joyous experiences of my life to watch her think that she can do that too. And so I feel like it's immensely important to bring our girls, our the next generation of girls, into a world where they feel like they can kick in a door and throw a grenade in a bad guy's face. You know, it's what American women do on the battlefield every day and have done for the last 20 years as part of the war in Afghanistan and Iraq. Right. So I feel like they should also be in mainstream fiction stories.
Well, I think this thriller gave you the opportunity to write about them in both sort of what they can do cerebrally with their in the intelligence field, but also what they can do with their brawn and their abilities in the battlefield. And I thought you did a nice job with that, and I'm assumed it was a conscious effort, so I'm glad to hear it actually was.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And it's, I'll tell you right now, man, it is a real challenge to write a woman character. Like, all of a sudden, like, if you saw my Google searches, like researching foundation and eye makeup and how women do their hair and how a ponytail feels under a helmet and what size boots they might wear and if the boots are this, I mean, it was just an immersive experience trying. I mean, it was very, very challenging to write a believable female character. And I still think, you know, I've got room for improvement for sure. But I think Meg is an essential component to these stories, you know? And so she challenges Eric in ways that only a strong female can, if you know what I'm saying.
Well, I think you'll get a lot of feedback from your female listeners or readers of this, and I'm sure our veteran radio listeners will give it to you as well. I did want to bring in that the idea of cold storage. Tell our listeners what cold storage is and where that came from.
Yes. So black site prisons, U.S. black site prisons. If you think back and you remember during the George W. Bush administration, this was a big controversy that the CIA was using black site prisons outside our country's borders. And so they're illegal, I know, you know, so to speak. So what we did away with them, the CIA did away with them. And so I thought, like, what would be a cool way to come up with a new fresh spin on a black site prison? And so cold storage is this massive nuclear icebreaker that all it does is circumnavigates the Arctic Sea around the North Pole. It's fully automated and it houses the worst terrorists on the face of the planet, men and women that are too dangerous to put in Guantanamo Bay. The U.S. sends the worst of the worst there, and then while intel operatives try to exploit intelligence from them. And so cold storage is a critical component of this story because Eric Steele needs to go there to stop the bad guy in this story from breaking a very, very, very bad human being from that ship.
It was an idea that, as I'm reading it and having been on ship up in the Arctic, it's sort of like, oh yeah, this would be a great place to put somebody. How did you end up with that versus some other alternative?
You know, it was like, okay, so I love watching like all the Marvel movies. I get a lot of my ideas from Marvel films, like Eric Steele's house. It's like, all I tried to do is design a house that I think Tony Stark would want to live in. And, you know, or Meg in the Oval Office exploiting the Keyhole program, which is this holographic cool intelligence program. I just try to think about what the next cool thing would be. And I try to write it in a believable way so that the reader can suspend disbelief. And so I always thought the floating carriers in the Marvel films that SHIELD uses were cool. But then I thought like a more believable way to do that would be, if I were going to make a prison, would be to put it on a massive nuclear icebreaker. It's in international waters. It gives the U.S. plausible deniability. You could send terrorists there and they'd never be able to escape. I mean, it would have to be minimally staffed, you know? And so I just felt like it would give the U.S., you know, the ability to still continue the use of black site prisons without anyone ever knowing.
So if we find out the CIA is doing this later on, we're going to come back and blame it on
probably,
you.
They get the idea for me. I don't know. And so I started getting challenged from people on this. So I started doing a deep dive research on the Arctic shipping lanes that are used out of Murmansk, Russia. There are hundreds of ships that circumnavigate those shipping lanes around the Arctic Sea. So just one. The ship could hide in plain sight, you know? I mean, so I tried to make it as believable as humanly possible, and in a way that gives the U.S. plausible deniability, you know?
Well, again, I think that attention to detail comes out in the novel and makes this military thriller fast-paced and engaging. And again, knowing that, hey, the guy who's writing this, he lived it. He wants it to be right. In terms of the weapons, in terms of the various battles, if you will, that occur really all over the world. We've got Russians, we've got the Middle East, we've got bombs. So everything everybody's going to be looking for is going to be in there. But you're doing something kind of cool I want to talk about. You have a virtual book club. Tell us about that.
Yes. I just rolled this out. Man, you were on it. I just unveiled... what I'm doing is a virtual book club to just give me more engagement with my readers. People that know me know that my readers are everything. And the reason why I continue to write these books one a year, which is monumentally challenging, is because it's for them, you know? And I want to share in that experience with my readers in a way that no author has ever done. I've not seen a single author, at least in the thriller space, which is a pretty big genre, do a book club where it allows them to engage with their readers. And so I'm rolling out this book club on September 29th. It's all going to be via Facebook Live and an exclusive Facebook group. We're going to get on. We're going to talk about All Out War, my first book, and the inspiration behind Eric Steele, you know. But as the book club grows, I'm going to pick more books that are, you know, high energy, high octane, fun, action-packed stories, or books that just inspire me, and we're going to do a deep dive on those too.
And how do people keep track of what you're doing and connect with you? Give us those details.
Well, you can check me out on Instagram at Official Sean Parnell. You can check me out on Twitter at Sean Parnell USA. Or Facebook. You can go to my Facebook page, search for me, Sean Parnell, right there. I think I'm the only verified Sean Parnell page on Facebook. And so you can keep up with all of my misadventures on social media. Or you can write me an email on my website at officialseanparnell.co.
So officialseanparnell.co. If you do a Google search, there's Sean Parnell. You might turn up somebody who's not this guy. So make sure you get this guy.
yes.
As we come to a close, Sean, tell us a little bit about what you're doing with your nonprofit these days.
Well, we've been doing – my nonprofit, the American Warrior Initiative, exists to serve those who serve us. Bottom line, we give 100% of our donations to veterans, first responders, and their families. And so – we started out with houses, realized that not everybody needs a house or not everybody's ready for a house. And then we just started meeting the veteran where they are in life, trying to help them in whatever way we can. And lately, over the last 2 years, we've focused in on something that is so cool and so important, and that's getting service dogs into the hands of our veterans. And so the wait list for service dogs is extremely long. And by the time a veteran finds themselves on the top of the list, oftentimes they can't afford the dog. So what we do is come in and fully fund the dog. And our bottom line is our goal is to just get as many dogs into the hands of veterans as fast as humanly possible, cut all the bureaucratic red tape that's involved in getting the dog in the hands of the veteran and just do it, make it happen. And what we've seen is that service dogs can have a profoundly positive effect on a veteran's life, not just allowing them to come home and survive, but thrive.
And we've talked to so many people on Veterans Radio who have confirmed the value of service dogs or just even companion dogs for veterans to help bridge that time from when you really had great buddies in service to maybe now you're feeling pretty alone back in the civilian world where people don't understand what you went through because the percentage of the population that serves is so small these days that this is really a great effort, and want to commend you for that and others who are working in this space.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
Well, we're wrapping up talking to Sean Parnell, author of Outlaw Platoon, Man of War, All Out War, the last two being Eric Steele military adventure or thrillers. Sean, will you, you said you're writing one a year. Does that mean you're going to continue that, or is your family just about had it with you grinding
I'm
out
writing,
the novels?
No, I'm pretty sure they've had it with me doing that, but I'm writing Steel 3 right now. And that's the challenging thing about writing these books, man, is that, you know, I've got to launch book 2, All Out War, coming out in a week, all while I'm writing book 3. So you're going to see at least two more Steel stories.
Well, that's
in the coming years.
That suggests to me that your publisher is very happy with William Marr's, very happy with how this is going, and that you might be under contract for two more.
I am under contract for two more books. Yes.
Now, anybody who's listening to this and going, "Oh man, this guy's really successful, and he's you know, born with a silver spoon in his mouth," you got to go listen to our first interview a year ago.
I am not. I am not that guy. I am about as blue collar as you can get.
and you got a ton of rejections before anybody said,
"Oh
yes,
my God, yeah, go listen to that interview." I got nothing but rejections for almost 2 years.
So this is a great story, but it, you know, we're only picking the top of it here. Go listen to the rest of it if you're a little wondering a little bit about it. And Sean, we really appreciate you taking some time to talk to Veterans Radio today, and we look forward to the opportunity possibly of talking to you again in a year from now.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. You know I'll be there.
Well, thanks for being on Veterans Radio.
All right. Take care, my friend.
We'll see you now.
And I want to thank everybody for listening to Veterans Radio today. I am Jim Fossone. It's been a pleasure to be your host. I'm a veterans disability lawyer at Legal Help for Veterans, and you can reach us at 800-693-4800 or legalhelpforveterans.com on the web. You can follow Veterans Radio on Facebook and listen to its podcasts and internet radio shows by going to veteransradio.net. And until next time, you are dismissed.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
Veterans Radio needs you. If you like our shows that are informative, surprising stories, and relevant information on what's happening at the VA and the military, we'd like your support. Individual support of $5 to $50 a month or corporate sponsorship of $1,000 to $10,000 would be welcomed. You can go to veteransradio.net, click on the sponsorship or support tab, pay online, and keep Veterans Radio on the air.